Gilbert Gottfried. This is Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast. I'm here with my co-host, Frank Santopadre, and we're once again recording at Nutmeg Post with our engineer, Frank Ferdarosa. Our guest this week is a popular and busy actor and writer with film credits including The Flamingo Kid, Single White Female, Jeffrey, Dracula Dead and Loving It, Stephen King's The Shining, Leaving Las Vegas, and of course the cult favorite Sour Grapes with former podcast guest Craig Bierico. He's also appeared in dozens of hit TV shows like Will and Grace, Tales from the Crypt, Monk, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, Brothers and Sisters, The Mindy Project, Parenthood, Two Broke Girls, and most notably as pilot Brian Hackett on the long-running series Wings. In his long-running career, he's worked with everyone from Mel Brooks to Leslie Nielsen to Mike Nichols to, most importantly, Gilbert Gottfried. Please welcome a funny and versatile performer and a man who claims that Charles Nelson Reilly once spit all over him while talking. Our pal, Stephen Weber.
Hello, everyone.
Thank you, Stephen.
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, Charles Nelson Reilly spat. He spat over everybody.
Why was he spitting?
Bits of desiccated sandwich and food, anything he was drinking. I did a cartoon with him called All Dogs Go to Heaven. He was in it. And
Was Dom DeLuise?
Burt Reynolds in that?
Well, he was in the original film. This was a TV version of it. Then Charlie Sheen, I think, did the sequel to it. And then they did a TV version of it. Anyway, and so I did it, and Dom DeLuise and I shared a sound studio for a couple of years, and he was great. He was also another very kind of liquid spewing kind of a dude, but Charles Nelson Reilly.
Oh, no, Mrs. Muir.
Was like
a
lawn sprinkler of a guy. Very sweet, but you had to cover your drink if you were standing next to him. And I was at a party once with him, you know, just once. And,
did he ever make a pass at you?
He didn't. I wasn't his type, I guess. I wasn't swarthy enough.
Well, Butch Patrick told us he chased him around the set of Lidsville.
He did?
Yes.
Butch Patrick was his type. Yes, I know who he was.
You know, saying to our audience members.
Butch Patrick,
Eddie Munster was being chased by Charles Nelson Reilly for sexual gratification.
Yeah, of course.
What was DeLuise
like? He certainly was. He had lots of lubricant to offer. That's what he was known for. I'm the lubricator. Dom DeLuise was a sweet, fantastic guy who was obviously very accessible as a performer, very open, and of course he had a foul mouth. You know, when you meet all your heroes and you find out that they're very human, and he was very human. I mean, he was kind of a mess physically. But he was very sweet and, and endlessly hilarious. I mean, the outtakes for that cartoon are hours and hours and hours of him saying, "Hey, your mother's ass," and all that stuff, which was fantastic. But he would read and fuck up, and it was great to be, sitting in the room with him.
And I heard he was constantly improvising stuff.
He was never on the page.
Yeah.
And so they more or less wrote around him or edited around him, and they let him do all his thing. And not everything was improvised for comedy purposes. He just rewrote it himself. He had that license, I guess.
Funny guy. I mean, think of him in The End with Burt Reynolds.
Oh, that's right. That's
and
right.
Also, of course, Blazing Saddles. But
I had heard a story that Mel Brooks one time hired Dom DeLuise for a movie, and he said to them, well, like, give him a week to film this. And they said, this scene will only take about an hour or so. And he goes, well, Dom,
Yeah, that's right. Well, he was also in the movie The 12 Chairs, which is, one of the unsung Brooks movies.
Frank Langella.
Frank Langella, yeah. Ron Moody. And it is hilarious.
Yeah, it's funny.
You know, I got to say, look, Mel Brooks is great. There's nobody like him. I'm so privileged to have known him. You know, I actually brought my kids to meet him, I want to say about 7 months ago. Brought him into Uncle Mel's office, right? And they were enthralled because they're getting their Jewish education through Mel Brooks, essentially. You know, just through listening to his records and seeing his movies and all that stuff. And not all of his movies have been. Have been so good, you know, and but his early ones to me are fantastic.
They are great.
You were in two.
I did one. I did Dracula, Dead and Loving It.
Yeah.
And then I did The Producers on Broadway. So I worked with him through that. And that's where we really got kind of close. Him and Anne Bancroft became pretty good friends. And again, just the idea that you're working with and knowing people that you grew up idolizing is interesting. And you see that he's a three-dimensional being. And he's an interesting cat to have to wear the burden of being the funniest man on earth for 70 years. Must be taxing.
Pressure.
Well, you know what it is like. Oh. You know.
Yeah, Gil.
I'm still
the funniest
waiting.
Man in the Northeast.
Yes. I'm the funniest guy in the elevator coming up here. What did you think of Dracula, Dead and Loving It?
The truth is that at the time, I know I was hopeful that it would be a companion piece to Young Frankenstein.
Mm.
But what I found out was that wasn't the case because a lot of the writing is well-meaning and as occasionally amusing it was, it didn't have the same kind of comic complexity or oomph or whatever you want to call it that Young Frankenstein had. What it didn't have essentially was Gene Wilder.
Yeah,
right?
who wrote the original
screenplay.
That's
right. That's right.
For Young Frankenstein.
But we had good writers, arguably, but it became more of like a Mad Magazine version of the story. And ultimately, it was not well received. It works much better on the small screen than it did in theaters. It's a film that kids like. I mean, my kids love that movie. And there are some funny scenes in it. Good performances. I got to work with Harvey Korman. And actually, I had something amazing happening. And this is – I'm patting myself on the back for this. AFI did a tribute to Mel last year, 18 months ago, something like that, maybe 2 years ago. And I brought my kids, and it was in Hollywood. And I mean, everybody was at this function, and everybody gave testimonies. And Gene Wilder was on film because he's fairly old, and he can't travel that much. But everybody was there. Cloris Leachman. I mean, it was crazy. And there was a filmed tribute where he was talking and asked, after an evening of showing all these amazing scenes from Blazing Saddles and, of course, Young Frankenstein, everything, what the funniest scene in all his movies was. And he said, it's a scene with Steven Weber stakes the vampire and blood comes out. And I'm sitting there with my kids and I thought I was dreaming. And they showed a sequence. And yeah, I even looked around for a second and saw all these hallowed performers saying, who? What? Huh? I mean, they couldn't – it wasn't the farting scene around the fire. It wasn't you name it. The scene with My Blue Blanket with the dream.
Sure,
no, it was this reasonably obscure scene. And I was never so thrilled in my life. I mean, I put it down to him basically – slowly slipping into senility, but I'll take it.
Have you asked him about it since?
No. I'm not even going to push
right,
it
right.
Because he'll say, "No, I think I lost my mind, or I was drunk, or something." He'll say something like that. But it was a great moment.
And what was it like working with Harvey Korman?
Harvey Korman was a hilarious, great, funny, and deceptively intense performer. And by intense, I mean he had great presence as the character. Who's he playing? I forget. He's playing Amy Asbeck's father, I suppose. And I forget his name. Dr. Seward. Not Seward. And he actually took his role very seriously. For a guy who's mostly known as a sketch comedy guy who's always breaking up. He was very grounded as an actor, which kind of surprised me. One of the failings of Dracula Dead and Loving It was that most of his funny stuff was cut out. Most of the stuff that you would have associated with a guy like him was edited, and I don't know why. A lot of the funny was left out of that particular film. And ultimately, Leslie Nielsen, who was a great performer, he's hilarious in his films, I don't think was the perfect match for it. He was excellent and funny.
Right.
I mean,
but sort of the star du jour of those kind of films
in
at
a way,
that point.
In a way. And yeah. And I'm not sure he had whatever rhythms would have been better suited
right.
for this particular movie.
I love Mel Brooks and I love Gene Wilder, but I always thought that they were better together.
Absolutely.
Then when Wilder made, and you know, The Adventures of
yes,
Sherlock Holmes,
yes.
The Smarter
yeah,
Brother
yeah,
has
right.
its moments,
that's
and
right.
The World's Greatest Lover, the Valentino one, and they all have their moments, but there was something magical. There was a Lennon and McCartney
yeah.
dynamic to the two of them.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
yeah.
And
yeah.
That there's just, and you know, he wound up in Blazing Saddles replacing Gig Young. I mean, that was an accident.
Replacing Gig Young,
yeah,
that's
that
right.
was an accident.
Wasn't Gig Young throwing things up?
I think he was having DTs or
yeah.
something
yeah.
from
– yeah.
But the two of them just had a dynamic and that wasn't the same when they were
yeah, it was interesting.
When they were on their own.
And so much depends on the circumstances. It was lightning in a bottle.
I think so.
And at one time it was like Leslie Nielsen was like, well, you're doing a parody, so Leslie Nielsen.
Right. Well, he was the bankable, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. He was the guy
right.
they would call upon
yeah.
for that for as soon as you said spoof.
Yeah, right or wrong.
Right. Because he did a fugitive spoof.
Yeah, yeah.
There was so many of them.
Yeah, yeah. But I'd heard that they originally were looking at considering Kelsey Grammer for Dracula, which would have been interesting.
Interesting.
You know,
getting back to Corman, I mean, did you ever see him in like Lord Love a Duck? I mean, he gave interesting performances.
We became friendly after that movie and played poker several times
uh-huh.
At this really old hilarious poker game, which is still going on in California. And it's run by a guy named Norby Walters.
Oh, that's the one Robert Wool shows.
Yeah,
shows.
That's
he told
right.
us about it.
Yeah, there's a lot of and I was originally when I was younger, I was approached by him to play in this game. He was always looking for new blood because all the people in this game they're all on Pritikin. You know, they all munch lettuce. and you say I'm gonna be playing with Charlie Durning and Harvey Korman. Everybody's so fucking old. You know, it was sad. But Harvey was hilarious and absolutely in his element with other decrepit Jews and sitting around a table who no longer smoked or drank. It was it was a little sad, but he was a great guy. And again, he told me that he had done a critically acclaimed Hamlet.
Yeah,
of
I was
all
just going to ask you about that
in L.A. as a young man.
Yeah, imagine that.
Yeah. Well, it's possible he was a tall guy.
Right.
And he was tall, so Hamlet, as we know, was tall.
Well, you look at a performance like Hedley Lamarr.
Yeah.
I can't believe I did
Hedley.
That.
Yeah,
Hedley.
Yeah.
In Blazing Saddles, and it's a comedic performance, but if you look at it, it's a dramatic performance. He's so believable.
He didn't
comedy straight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except when he broke the fourth wall. No, he
right.
was hilarious.
Right.
You know, he knew exactly what to do. That's it. That's all I'll say on that.
he's come up on this show a couple of
yeah.
times in an unflattering role.
Why?
Which was when he had the misfortune of playing Bud Abbott.
Oh,
in the Bud and Lou.
Yeah.
Oh, with Buddy Hackett.
Buddy Hackett. Yeah. Not a good one.
What do you want me to say about that?
And in Dracula Dead and Loving It,
yeah.
you worked again with your co-star from
Amy Yasbeck.
Yeah, Amy Yasbeck.
Yeah. Who is another, to me, she's not used enough. She's singularly hilarious. She would be great at punching up a show. She's one of the funniest people I've ever met. She'd be great on this show.
We'll have her on.
Yeah.
She worked with Gilbert.
Yeah. Well, I did two Problem Child movies with her.
Okay.
And also with
Wings.
Both of you.
That's
you
right.
and Amy on
that's
Wings.
Right, that's right.
I did about three episodes.
Yeah, and she's a good friend and remained a good friend. You know, the funny thing was that right after John Ritter died, we went in to record the I guess, the extra tracks that they have for Dracula Dead and Loving It. You know, the I forget what you call it, but you know, the not the guide track, but you where we comment on it, the commentary.
Mm-hmm.
And we were and she was still in a you know, a terrible state, and we went in and had a hilarious 2 hours of just kind of riffing and watching and remembering the amazing times we had. First and foremost, as far as I'm concerned, it was the best time I ever had making a film, because we literally sat at Mel's feet while he and Harvey did shtick. And they did old kind of Yiddish Alka-Seltzer commercials. And they that apparently ran, I don't know on what station. And it was phenomenal to see these guys, and you understood why they were as successful as they became, because they really had the chops. You know, and then Anne Bancroft would hang out, and then what's his name? Dom DeLuise would come by. What's his name? You know, Charlie Callis. You know, one of my heroes.
God, Charlie Callis
would come by, and it was, I was in heaven, man.
Of course,
was really heavenly.
Especially a kid in Queens who grew up listening to the 2,000-Year-Old Man albums,
listening to that, and seeing you know, 10 from your show of shows on my little VHS, my tape, where they had episodes from the old Sid Caesar. You know, it was fairly amazing. I taught Anne Bancroft to make a cricket sound, which goes on. That's crappy, but because I don't have enough. I don't have the Charles Nelson Reilly amount of saliva.
Yeah.
If he was here to talk to me, it would collect in my mouth and I'd be able to regurgitate it. But, I mean, it was a great time. You know, it was a great time for me. But, again, we were acutely aware that this – it wasn't going to be so great.
Top,
you know?
It wasn't going to be the original producers of Blazing Saddles.
No, but it was, I mean, just again, just to be in the presence of these guys was really good. And also to see Mel, another side of Mel, which was the guy who's has an ego, who can scream if something doesn't get done. You know, he wasn't the jocular kind of Yiddish, you know, genius. He was that. But also he could be a perfectionist. And he could, you know, order somebody around. And it was, again, edifying.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And now back to the show.
Did you got along with him as a director, though?
Yeah. I mean, I did anything he told me to fucking do, you know. If you told me to drink Charles Nelson Reilly's saliva, I'd have done it. By the gallon. I don't care how stringy it would have been.
I want to tell you that I saw Charles Nelson Reilly's one-man show in L.A.
Really?
And it was fantastic.
He was
and
hilarious,
it was about,
too.
It was about 4 hours.
Of
it went
I'm
on.
Talking about it. About directing opera.
Yeah. Julie
Hope Lang.
What was it? Julie Harris.
Julie Harris and I.
Yeah.
It was great. It went on endlessly, but it was rewarding.
Yeah.
And now one thing, according to the introduction, at least, they say it's a cult favorite.
Sour grapes.
You're going
sour
there already,
grapes.
Huh?
Sour grapes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, sour grapes was another another disappointment.
Created by Larry.
Larry
written
David.
By Larry David.
And directed,
and directed
by,
Larry David.
Yes.
It was actually one of the hotter scripts going around town, so I'm given to understand. A lot of people were interested. Names Steve Martin came up. Other guys that were vying for this because it was a fairly traditional buddy comedy that was not unlike, I want to say, Where's Papa or that type of genre of movie from the 60s and 70s.
The fortune cookie a little
bit. Fortune cookie, exactly. Yeah. And fortunately, he chose Larry went for two, I mean, relative unknowns, although we had worked, Craig Bierko and myself, and we were thrilled. And it was hilarious. We thought a funny script. And we had a great time doing it. It was very funny. And again, something happened, not in the execution of it, but afterwards it seemed that the studio had somehow abandoned the film. I think at the time, not Lionsgate, or I forget what the studio was, but they went with another film, and the film happened to be My Giant, Billy Crystal. We all remember that movie.
Oh, yes, it's a classic.
My Giant. And they, I feel like they sunk all their PR into that. I think it also was coming out at the same time that maybe the Seinfeld finale or something was happening. So suddenly Larry's attention was off the film and we were a little left on our own. It did not get critical reception. That was very good. Of course, it was invariably compared to Seinfeld, which is not a shock since he wrote it. It was a very Seinfeldian kind of a world. And but it didn't diminish it at all. And it has found cult status on college campuses and, you know, who knows, assisted living facilities.
Oh, there's a lot of funny stuff in it.
It's funny, man. It's hilarious.
You're both funny. And we love Craig. We're biased because we love Craig, but you're both
funny.
You're both funny in it. The scene with Craig and Philip Baker Hall when he goes in to quit.
That's right.
It's fantastic.
And it's real. It's vintage Larry David. But in very few Seinfeld episodes is Jerry seen sucking himself off. And in Sour Grapes, you have the protagonist able to autofillate. And I guess this was what Larry had been just desperate to do because it was a Seinfeld type. But I've just got to get a guy sucking himself off.
He wanted to break out of the TV.
He wanted to break out. Yeah. This is what he'd been dying to do. This is why he got into show business.
And Jack Burns turns up.
Jack
all
Burns.
People.
Yep. Yes, yes, yep. Yep. Huh? Yeah. Huh? I mean, which used to convulse me. Yeah, Jack Burns was in that. Oh, God.
What was he like?
I was a nightmare. No, he was great.
Yeah. We had Kelly Carlin on the show, and, you know, Burns and Carlin. Back in the day,
they
were a duo, and we said to Kelly,
before Avery Schreiber.
Yes, before Burns and Schreiber, and we said to Kelly, we'd love to have Jack Burns on the show, and she says he doesn't do anything. He doesn't come out of the house.
He doesn't come out of the house.
Unfortunately,
here's a problem. You know, we grew up watching these guys and listening to them, and they never changed. And then you realize it's 40 years later,
yeah.
You know, and people fucking age.
That's the challenge of booking this show.
Oh, everybody's dead that you like.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I tell my
kids. There's a lot of that.
My kids, who we talked about liking black and white films, and they love the Marx Brothers, and oh, la, 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 la. Every time we watch something, they now know the pattern. They say, wow, this is funny. He's really funny. Is he dead?
Yeah.
I say, he's dead. Okay, all right, fine.
On this show, we'll book somebody, and we'll, I don't know how many times it's happened where their manager or son calls up and goes, they died last night.
It just happened. God. Well, not that they died, but it just happened that somebody, we won't mention any names, but that somebody had to cancel because they weren't in top condition.
And Jack Carter actually did die.
Really?
Yeah, Jack Carter booked.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
He would have been a great one.
He would have been a great one. I mean, I met a lot of these guys over the years because my father was an agent for comics and singers, and my grandfather was an agent for comics and singers in the Catskills.
The famous Willie Weber.
Famous, infamous, I think. But, yeah, famous. He's in a couple of books. He managed Gleason and Rickles.
Yeah.
And then for some reason let both of those guys go early on. Who knows why, or maybe they left them. It's been a kind of a mystery.
And did you ever have any dealings or meetings – with Jackie Gleason or Don Rickles?
No, I never did. I mean, they were both way before my time. But I finally got to see Rickles several years ago. I'm friends with the great John Stamos, who's got a finger. He's got fingers in many pies. Apparently.
I just saw John a couple of weeks ago.
I mean, he's fucking. Knows everybody, right?
We should have him on too. He's a good storyteller.
Yeah. Forget it. Well, he loves all the old entertainers too, and he's kind of a Rickles' best pal, for fuck's sake. And he when I told him my history, he said, "Well, you know, Don's gonna be doing a show in Anaheim. Did you ever see him?" I said, "No," And so he took me. I think Jack Klugman was there. I mean, it was ridiculous.
This is great.
It was ridiculous. And Gene Bayless was there.
Gene Bayless?
No, well, no, he wasn't there.
Did your
Bayless.
Father manage
My father
Gene
managed
Bayless?
Gene Bayless. Gene Bayless. And for those who don't know, Gene Bayless was a hilarious comic.
Hilarious.
And, but not a big star, but one of these legends among other comics, right? Anyway, so I go to see Don Rickles, and he filled this arena, I forget, in Anaheim. And I was enthralled. And in fact, at one point, I guess Stamos told him that I was there. He stopped and he said, "There's a guy in the audience." I can't do Don Rickles. whose grandfather managed me, the great Willie Weber. And he did a mini tribute, which was thrilling.
Wow.
And I got to tell you, you know, half the audience was kind of, you know, Latino and African-American and Asian. And you think, woe to whoever is one of those groups, because he was fucking on fire, this guy, and doing like World War II humor, doing like teeth humor. Crazy, and I was terrified. You know, look, I'm in this culture, so I'm PC minded. Well, they loved him so much. He got these Japanese guys up on stage, and they did Iwo Jima humor. It was, and they were in heaven.
Hilarious.
You know what I mean? I mean, they were fucking thrilled to death to be roasted by Rickles, and Rickles was amazing until at some point in his act. First of all, he's very old. He does a tribute. He does kind of a tribute to the flag and our fallen and you know, the warriors. And it became kind of surreal.
Well, a little mawkish, huh?
Mawkish is a good word. Yeah. Yeah, it was strange. It kind of veered from the...
But that's old school showbiz.
Old school. When he would say, you know, I'm a nice guy,
right,
in spite of what you hear, they would have to throw in a song. You know,
right,
like I'm sure you do Battle Hymn of the Republic.
Yeah. He does a little
Morales. A little Jessel. Nobody knows about Jordan Jessel. That's one of your standbys.
Hello, Mama.
Good Mama. And you're the tribute to Mr. Sid Caesar. George Jessel.
I mean, we got dueling like Jessels here.
Dueling Jessels.
And we met, of course, on Wings.
Yeah, Wings, that's right, where you played Bill...
William Hickey's nephew, Lewis. Yeah.
Yeah, that was funny. Well, you know, we can talk about Wings if you like, but Wings is, you know, people still come up to me. It's all I'm kind of known for, more or less. But it was a good show, a utility show. It was never a sexy show. We were always on when Friends was on, or Cheers, or I want to say Seinfeld. So we never got any kind of big notoriety, but we were able to get fantastic talent. Gilbert being he wasn't. Bill Hickey.
Well, tell us a little bit about Bill Hickey since you brought him up.
Bill Hickey was a kind of a legendary he was an acting teacher more than anything else.
Most people would know him from Pritzy's Honor.
Pritzy's Honor, that's right. But he was also...
he talk like that. Do you want a cookie? Yeah.
But he was also in the original movie of The Producers, mm-hmm, where he played
drunk. That's right.
That they encounter at the end in the bar. And there's actually a scene that I remember seeing as a kid, and I saw it recently again, that was cut out of the television version, you know, when they would bring these films to TV on the 4:30 movie, the ABC movie.
Yes.
They would cut scenes out. And there was a long scene where instead of Kenneth Mars as the Nazi playwright blowing up the theater with Leo and Max by lighting fuses, right? The short fuse and the long fuse. And that actually it didn't result in the explosion of the theater. What resulted was they were rigging up that plunger device, and who comes out of the bar is a drunken Bill Hickey. And he looks at the thing, he says, "What's this, Whitney's cotton gin?" And he goes to put his foot on the plunger to tie his shoelace, and that's what blows up the theater. So that's a fascinating anecdote, I know. But by the time he came around to Wings – and this was past Pritzy's Honor — he was already kind of a wisp of a guy. I mean, he had no apparently had no musculature at all. He was bones and some tendons. He was a drinker and a smoker.
Really?
He was scary to look at. Yeah.
Wheezing. I mean, just blinking kind of exhausted him.
I remember we stayed at the hotel and they pick us up in the same car. And he had some woman who was supposed to be his keeper who didn't hold on to him.
Yeah.
And he looked like Night of the Living Dead. He weighed 2 pounds.
Yeah.
And was wobbling. And he was one of those classic cases, though, of when they yelled action, he could do it.
He could. But it was still frightening to watch because he really had maybe 48 breaths left in him.
Oh, yeah.
And yet he was still able to hang on, and be funny. I mean, it was actually great casting for you guys, I think. But he was again, one of those people that you couldn't really get close to because you were distracted by his physical state.
Yeah.
And again, another instance of meeting your heroes or seeing these famous people and realizing that they're made of clay.
Sure. Well, that's the thing with this show. I mean, you're one of the guests that actually listens to the show, which we're flattered by.
And who's under 60 years old.
You're also under 60.
Yes, who's still alive. You're
still alive.
The challenge, you know, we're trying to use the show to tell the showbiz history through these stories before they're gone. And sometimes, you know, you don't get there in time.
Well, it's like the Mayan culture, you know, like the whole thing. I used to work in the Catskills, you know, and so many of these, and you probably worked up there. That culture has been completely obliterated, and it was the richest, complex, wonderful culture. It really was, with every conceivable entertainer worked in this area.
Well, Mel Brooks used to work.
Was he a tumbler, Mel Brooks?
Yeah.
Tumbler. And Danny Kaye was a tumbler, and all these guys.
Oh, yeah.
I worked up at this hotel called Kutcher's and another one called the Concord. And they were thriving resorts, beautiful, big, tons of food. And not just the Jew comic was there. You know, you had amazing – you had Sinatra, Ray Charles. I saw Cab Calloway up there.
Wow.
It was crazy stuff. Fun. But it's all gone.
It seems like when you think about it, you think something nearby – where you get entertainment, you get the outdoors. Mm-hmm. Why it wouldn't have been a nice vacation for to live on further?
I think their base audience was aging out.
Yeah,
and they were always waiting for gambling to come to New York State. Right, it never came. They were waiting, and that would bring the next wave, the next generations. Because by the time the 70s came around, and that's when I was working there, the hotels were pretty much dying, and they were scrambling to make themselves vital. You know, there were singles weekends, there were disco, I remember there were teachers teaching disco, and. I mean, the time of these hotels was passing.
What were you doing there, Steve?
I was at Kutcher's. I was on the so-called athletic staff. I called bingo. I lined tennis courts and did odd jobs. And then at night, I would hold when I was sober enough to, because I was in my teens and it was all pot and drinking and girls and everything was amazing. I would hold the lights. I would point the lights on the stage, and saw all these acts. I saw Jan Murray. I saw, like I say, Cab Calloway. I saw, I think, Sandler and Young. And crazy
Sandler and Young.
And all these acts. And of course, that was my kind of family's background. So it made sense to me that I was there. And then I was a cabana boy around this huge pool at the Concord, and it was where they would have singles weekends. And this is when they were really trying to do the best they could to revitalize their base. And you know who was there a lot was Lenny Schultz.
Lenny Schultz.
And he would at the Concord occasionally. In lieu of being an actual tumbler, he would make an appearance and he would walk around the pool with a papoose, with a doll of a baby in the back of the papoose. And he had a riding crop in one hand, and he'd walk around and he would scream, "Shut up! Shut up! Shut up!" And he would hit the baby with the riding crop and walk around and kind of, and people would howl. And it was great. It was a great time. It really was.
I remember Lenny Schultz in a chicken costume.
Well, that was his big shtick. He was a big star, but he was on Laughing.
Yeah.
I think there was a special with
Interesting
him.
Interesting cat.
Yeah. He was a gym teacher.
Yeah. He never took off
the way
he should have, because I remember he used to appear at Catch a Rising Star all the time, and the audience would go out of their minds.
Go crazy, Lenny, they would say. That was his thing. He would, you've heard of Meet the Press? Well, here's Press the Meat, and he would have chopped meat and smash it. And it was all very kinetic shtick, a lot of weird faces. It wasn't, intelligent comedy, but it was hilarious. We would scream for him. And then we'd go to clubs at night. Of course, get hammered on Tequila Sunrises.
And your dad represented some of those Borscht Belt guys, like Freddie Roman and Dick Capri, who are both still
Dick
with
Capri,
us, by the way.
That's right.
Two guys we should get on the show, Gil.
Yeah.
Freddie,
really should.
Got to have Catskill stories.
Well, I got to tell you something. Several years ago, I went to see – there was a Broadway show called Catskills on Broadway.
Sure.
I think I brought my mom, and who wanted to see it. And I went with some trepidation because I thought, oh, it's going to be old people again. Oh, here we go. It's going to be corny shit. And it was amazing. These people knew how to work a room. And, there were three. It was Dick Capri, Freddie Roman.
Malzie Lawrence.
And Malzie Lawrence was the cleanup.
Yeah.
And he fucking destroyed the theater. It was like
a music
box theater. Destroyed the theater.
It's hilarious.
I could not believe what he was doing.
It is funny with a lot of these performers who I've gone to see thinking, I'm going to laugh at how bad they are and how out of touch. And then when you watch them, they go, oh, wait, they're fucking great.
They're great. They were artists. They knew what they were doing, honed after decades of working rooms, and probably had every conceivable challenge in front of them. Marilyn Michaels was also in
the show. Oh, she's still around. She's on Facebook.
Let me tell you,
funny.
They really killed it. They really
funny
did.
Funny lady.
Several years ago, I was working up at Williamstown doing a play, and I ran into the son of another Catskills agent. This guy's name was Arnold Graham. And Arnold Graham's son recognized me, and we started talking about the Catskills and all that stuff. And he told me, some comedian, I want to say Mac Robbins or somebody whose name is not around anymore, some guy. They are now working, these comedians. They can't stop working. Now they do gigs at assisted living facilities in Florida or in New Jersey, and they're, 85, 87, 90 years old, and they still keep going. Huh? Sounds good,
Incredible.
Doesn't it, Gilbert?
Yeah.
Huh?
He's thinking about it.
Sounds good. Yeah. Should get in on it now.
Yeah.
I have some rare video that I have to send you of Morty Gunty and Gene Baylos. Roasting Joe Franklin.
Oh,
I'll send it to you.
Bayless. Well, what I remember, one time being booked at the Nivoli.
The Nivoli, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was sitting in their lunchroom at one point, and there was a family there having breakfast or lunch, and the rabbi jumped up and ran over to their table really angrily and yelled at them. Because, a little kid there was having a glass of milk with some meat that he was eating. And you couldn't mix milk and meat.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, if they're that desperate to keep alive, you shouldn't have those kind of difficulties.
No. Milk and meat. Most rabbis are composed mostly of milk and meat.
Yeah.
If you squeeze them hard enough, something like milk comes out of their meat.
So your dad, I find this fascinating. And we just to give this a little subtext, when you first came here, we had Pat Cooper in this room about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And he was sitting in this chair discussing Willie Weber.
Wow.
Which I find to be a very strange coincidence. And telling us how Willie Weber, and it's in his book,
Your
grandfather got him booked on the Gleason Show.
Amazing. Amazing.
And that was a turning point.
Yeah, I
for
guess
him.
So. Well, my grandfather was apparently, I'm given to understand, a fairly influential guy in this particular circle of comedians. My grandfather, interestingly enough, was an orphan, you know, in Harlem at the turn of the 20th century, and grew up on the streets. It was a very tough, sinewy, you know, kind of Jew, and he fought his way up and became involved in the mob. He worked with a guy we were talking about named Waxy Gordon.
Well, I love that. Waxy Gordon.
Waxy Gordon, who was a New Jersey mobster. And he had a lot of kind of adventures, my grandfather. And then he went from gangster, I think, to agent, which is a logical next step.
Oh, yeah.
And
Both dishonest.
And
why did he go to jail? Was he involved in some kind
apparently of – apparently he was maybe running drugs and from the back of his car, or he took the fall for somebody.
Uh-huh.
And again, it was all very hush-hush. I could never get – I got very few details about that side of the family from these people. They knew how to keep a secret. Omerta, I guess.
And yeah, yeah.
But the story was that he was loyal to whatever Don there was at the time, and for a while, and my mother confirmed this when she first married my father, they went to an Italian wedding, and to which this Don was there, and when they saw my grandfather, everything stopped. And the Don, I don't know who it was, said, "Willie, come here." You know? And my mother, I couldn't believe it. Fucking, you know, Don Corleone was embracing her father-in-law. So he must have been, you know, trusted in some ways. And he was a really tough guy. He was very hard on my dad. You know, my father had a very tough childhood through being, I want to say, abused by this guy who probably received lots of abuse himself. And there was that kind of toughness that he was known for by his comics. Right.
Yeah, but I mean, always everything you read about him is that he was generous to comics, that he was you know, decent.
He may have been. Yeah. He may have been. I mean, yeah. Who knows? It's all a mystery. I've had to kind of make up or imagine pieces of this
puzzle.
Because
you never met him?
I did know him when I was – he was old. He by the time I came into the picture you know, we would sleep over my grandparents' house, an apartment in Queens, which overlooked a cemetery, which was great. And he would go in, he would come in the mornings and bring the papers. But I didn't see him when he was at his height. But I was given to understand that, yeah, while he was generous to his comics, he was also extremely tough. I really don't know what qualifications he had to kind of steer or guide these guys' careers, but he must have had an eye in order to find them to begin with.
Yeah, our friend Lou Cliff Nesterhoff has some really great stuff that he managed. Lou Marsh and Tony Adams, that mean anything to you? These were acts managed. Stone and Shine?
Stone and Shine.
And Jackie Vernon.
Well, Jackie Vernon, yeah. Jackie Vernon, everybody knows.
And Mickey Shaughnessy, you know that name, Gil?
I've heard the name.
Yeah.
Mickey Shaughnessy was actually in a few movies. I think he was like a... He was a character guy. He was a D's, Dums, and Don't of a guy, I think. And a comic, you know.
And Jackie Vernon, of course, was, "Here's some slides for my vacation."
But his hand on his stomach, right?
And he'd have a little clicker, and he'd go, "Here's Manuel leading us around the quicksand. Here's Manuel from the waist up. Here's Manuel's hat."
But Jackie Vernon says, "God bless Willie Weber," which I found online. In Cliff's book, there's more than a few mentions of your grandpa. And this is interesting because you know that Rickles didn't start out as an insult comic. He apparently started out doing impressions.
He did?
And the insult thing came – you knew this, Gil.
Yeah,
the insult
Jackie
thing
Leonard.
Came much later. Well, people claim that Jackie Leonard
always claimed Don Rickles stole his whole personality.
Because I don't remember Jackie Leonard necessarily being an insult comic, right?
Yeah, he was. I don't remember Jackie Leonard. But I guess he would pick on people in the audience.
It's said that Don Rickles at early in his career imitated Peter Lorre. And did other impressions, and that your grandfather, when he was booking him, if they would tell him, "Well, we don't need another comic," your grandfather would tell people he was a harmonica virtuoso. This is what I found.
That's interesting.
Online.
Yeah.
I hope it's true. Was it Weber who told Pat Cooper, I want to get you on Gleason, but first I want to book you in St. Louis.
Right.
Yeah. So he'd go to St. Louis and he'd bomb, but help develop him.
Interesting. You know, you wonder where he got this acumen from, this understanding. And again, because I don't remember him being particularly funny. My father, too, was who I guess followed in his footsteps.
Phil Webb attractions.
Yeah. Yeah. Because Phil Greenwald was his partner for a while. And Philly Greenwald was the guy that worked up the Concorde. And he was, I guess, the booker at the Concorde and a reasonably powerful guy, again, in that circle. But then my father My father was partners with his father, and then Willie died, and then my dad was on his own, and he worked with Pat Cooper, who I knew when I was a kid, and his other big actor was a guy named Pat Henry.
Pat Henry
opened for Sinatra.
Forever. Yeah.
And he was a Chicago-based comic, and not well known today, but you can find some stuff on YouTube. You know, thank God for the internet, which is both wonderful and horrific. But for this type of stuff, you can find anything. And indeed, I found some footage of Pat Henry, I think, on the Ed Sullivan Show. And he wasn't a comedian who was inherently hilarious or maybe could improvise, but he developed, you know, I guess an hour or so of material. And I would actually go to nightclubs with my father and then go backstage and see that whole world, which was interesting, especially when he was with Sinatra. But a couple of times I went to these smaller clubs, and my father would then huddle with him afterwards and give him notes. And again, even then at the time, I thought, what the hell does my father know about comedy? He ain't funny. But again, he was a stalwart, I suppose, and they liked my father and my grandfather, which is odd.
We will return to Gilbert Gottfried's amazing, colossal podcast, but first, a word from our sponsor.
And now back to the show. And then you made a movie. You wrote a movie called Clubland.
I did. I wrote a movie which miraculously got made. It was for Showtime, you know, before Showtime was really cool. This is when they allowed guys like me to write movies, and I guess they were hurting for materials. But I was able to make a quasi-biographical or autobiographical movie about my father and his father, Stewie and Willie. And Alan Alda played Willie, and I played Stewie. I played my own father. And it was and I cobbled together a story that had some biographical events in it, but I had to make this whole thing up. And Saul Rubinek, who's a wonderful actor,
oh, we love Saul Rubinek.
Oh yeah,
yeah, he was great, and he directed it. And it was kind of a very artsy version. We did these kind of real time transitions. Saul loved to transition from winter to summer without cutting the camera. So it'd be winter over here where he'd point the camera, and meanwhile people would be frantically changing over the scene while he slowly panned to the summer. And you know, yeah, and it was great, but it took forever and it wasn't compelling really for an audience to watch.
And Brad Garrett turns up. Was he playing a Gleason kind of character?
Brad Garrett played my grandfather's big comic that ends up leaving him. You know, so there was that aspect.
So it was a little bit of Rickles, a little bit.
He was a composite. And right. And Brad was great. I think it was one of his first kind of solid acting roles, you know. And it was great. It was great to do. But, you know.
Did you meet Sinatra?
I didn't quite meet him, but I was backstage. There used to be a theater called the Westchester Premier Theater, and which I'd heard later on was mob-owned. That
surprise.
Shocking.
Yeah.
That notwithstanding was a viable theater, and Pat Henry was opening for Sinatra at the Westchester Premier Theater, and I went backstage and met a variety of characters that were in the kind of Sinatra world. One was a guy named Nifty, who seemed to be absolutely
Nifty together with Waxy or whatever.
Waxy Nifty.
It's like out of a movie that you think didn't exist in real life.
All these guys. Oh,
Nifty.
I took these characters and put them in the movie that I wrote. Nifty was a guy that somehow carried all the band's music. The band was Sam Butera and the Witnesses that had worked with Louis Prima, actually. But he was the band. They were the band. And Nifty was hopped up on, and I'm not making this up, cough medicine. was his drug, I think, of choice. He was fucking guzzling cough medicine, and it was the 70s, so he had a shag haircut, and he was a tough guy, and he was drinking cough medicine. Another guy was a guy they called the Czar. The Czar. And the Czar was a diminutive guy named Larry who was, I guess, kind of an idiot. I don't know what he was doing, but he was – he carried some of Pat Henry's papers. They had these kind of
– Pat Henry was Italian.
Hang around. He was Italian. Yeah. So Nifty, the Czar. And then next door, I could hear Sinatra warbling and warming up. And that was it, you know. And I never got to meet him. I recall meeting a priest who carried a gun. I recall meeting a guy who my father introduced me to as Shooter. And indeed, he was a squat, scary-looking guy, Bob Hoskins type, who had, you know, shook my little hand. Whoa. His hand was like a catcher's mitt. How you doing, kid? And they were all so nice. And there's something incredibly compelling about that whole world. I'm sure there was a lot of shit that I could not even imagine. I do remember seeing some woman had passed a Polaroid of her naked to give to Pat Henry. And I remember somehow my 13-year-old eyes kind of just found this thing as it was passed from Nifty to the Czar to Pat. You know, I was like, "Ah!" And I realized that this is the business for me.
What part of Queens did you grow up in? We were talking before.
I grew up
all over?
All over. I grew up in Briarwood, Flushing, Fresh Meadows, Rico Park. Forest Hills.
I'm from that area too. Yeah. My dad had there were also guys in the neighborhood that my dad knew with those nicknames.
Oh,
there was
I'm
a guy
sure.
they called Handsome Pills.
Handsome
because
Pills.
Because somebody once said, "Look at this guy. He looks like he just swallowed a whole bottle of Handsome Pills. And that then the name stuck.
Handsome
there were
Pills.
All these guys.
It had this kind of post-war flavor to it. I mean, there were still old candy shops and luncheonettes with, you know, like out of the Bowery Boys, who had malted machines and red stools.
There was still some of that when I was growing up.
A lot of it. And then it kind of really changed, I want to say, in the 70s.
I guess all of us remember getting a malted, and they would fill the glass with the malted and give you the metal shaker.
That's right.
Sure. They would always
or you got a chocolate egg cream. Same
that's
thing.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're from Coney Island, so there must have been a million of those places.
Oh, yeah.
Around.
The metal shaker was cold.
Right? Yes.
It was nice and cold.
Yes.
And it was
hard
amazing.
To find.
And it was like,
you
so you got
know.
Really over two glasses of milk.
Well, there's Eisenberg's. What's the name? And you're still in your neighborhood, right? The little place in Chelsea that has the old lunch counter.
I went to that place. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. They try to do that.
You left.
And no one remembers if I go into a place and say malted, they don't know what it is.
They don't know what you're talking
You're still
about.
Going into deli?
Yeah. I want a malted.
They were drugstores in those days.
Drugstores.
Now, also... getting back to Wings for a second, there was like one of the leads was the very pretty, sexy Crystal Bernard. And now you were telling me something about a song she released about her family.
She came from a kind of a classic evangelical tent meeting kind of a background. That the family actually went on, you know, they went to revival meetings, I guess, and sang all manner of songs that would get you to embrace Jesus. And one of these songs was, and I heard it, was called The Monkey Ain't No Relative of Mine. And you can ask Amy Yazbek about this.
Is this an anti-evolution kind of a thing, or
anti-monkey,
trial?
Or anti-relative?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, anti-monkey.
Pro Scopes trial song with it. Tons of them. Ray Stevens did a big Scopes trial.
Scopes trial period.
The monkey ain't no relative of mine.
That's
so
right.
Basically denying the whole evolution.
Maybe the monkey ain't no relative. I guess that's what it was. Look, the key to, I guess, certain sects is that evolution is false. But the thing was that Crystal was and is, I mean, I haven't seen her in a while, I think one of the most underrated comic actresses on TV. She was very – oh, look, you and she – did great routines on that show where you were constantly leering at her and she would fend you off with that kind of acid.
She was terrific.
She was really good.
Because it was always like, you know, I was the typical.
Yeah.
My being obnoxious. Uh-huh. And like.
You were playing a lech?
Yeah. The horny guy and I'm just constantly trying to come on to her.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she's like disgusted.
She was disgusted.
I remember one thing that I'll always remember about Crystal Bernard, though, was one time we were about, you know, I would always like do the thing that like I'm making a pass at her and then she'd insult me.
Yeah.
And then one time backstage, we were about to go on and Crystal Bernard put her arms around me and said, I'm sorry I have to say so many bad things about you.
Well, that's nice.
How nice.
That's really nice.
Wow. She was really authentic.
That's interesting. Did she give you a hand job?
Yeah, a blow job, but it was very quick. And she spit it out. But
on camera? On camera?
Yes.
She did a spit take of your semen?
She went, I said, the king is alive. And she went,
Wow.
Yeah. Most people don't know when watching spit takes. Spit takes on TV shows, that's mostly cum. Because that's the best consistency. Because you can't see regular water or seltzer on TV. Yeah. Most of it is body fluids.
And yogurt didn't fly.
It doesn't fly. Semen is so aerodynamic. Who knew?
Speaking of wings.
Yeah, go ahead.
I want to ask you about a couple of other people who are on the show. Besides two of our podcast guests, Craig, who we talked about, and Josh Mostel.
Josh Mostel, that's right. Yeah. Zero Sun, Josh.
But here's a list of interesting people. I just want to see if there are any memories. These jog any memories. Rosemarie.
Rosemarie, I think she's still alive.
She is.
Yes.
She is. She's still
we
alive and alert.
We just interviewed Dick Van Dyke.
Dick Van Dyke on a couple of weeks ago.
Amazing. Oh, my God. He's amazing. Yeah, Rosemarie was on it, and we were in awe of her. You know, she was great. She still got it. You know, that it, whatever it is.
How about Soupy?
That's right. Soupy Sales was on it. I mean, this show was the fucking nexus of everybody. Just stopped. We did. We were on for 7 years. We had so many people on the show. Soupy Sales was on the fucking show.
Norman Lloyd, who's still with us.
Oh, Norman Lloyd is 185 years old.
Judd Apatow was going to get him for us.
He's hilarious, Norman Lloyd. Plays tennis.
Work with Chaplin and Keaton.
Work with Chaplin. And Hitchcock.
Judd Apatow was telling us that Norman Lloyd, he hired for this last movie.
That's right.
And here he is. He's 100. He showed up by himself.
Drove himself to the set.
Yeah.
That's right.
Love that.
Wiped his ass with the body of Bill, of William. William Hickey. Wrung him out.
Here's a couple others. Pat Hingle. Did the show?
Yeah, Pat Hingle. My God, I worked with Pat Hingle.
Pat
Hingle was great. A great actor. I was in The Shining with him. You know, he lost his pinky. He didn't lose it. I mean, it was ripped out of him as a young actor.
I did not know that.
If you watch his films, you can.
You can see that.
Yeah,
wow. You brought him up a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Pat Hingle.
Yeah. I was always a big fan of Pat
A really wonderful actor. And I got to tell you, while we were shooting Wings one night, you know, we always had a warm-up comic. We had a band. There was lots of tumult and it was a din. And we were fine. But he was absolutely tortured by it. He couldn't believe it. And he was kind of outraged as though he hadn't done a four-camera, you know, sitcom, but there was so much noise and so much party atmosphere in order to just keep the audience interested, for Christ's sake. You know, they were handing out sugar, you know,
One thing, if people out there haven't been to the filming of a show, they'll have comedians come out and they'll do like, you know, the Macarena. They'll be tossing stuff out to the audience. Right. They got to keep the audience awake.
Because it's 4 hours, sometimes more.
Oh, yeah. I came to a Wings taping.
You did?
Yeah, I don't remember the comic.
I remember you.
Yeah.
I remember
you. My first year in L.A. Yeah.
You were wearing a gray jacket.
That's right.
Gray jacket farting.
That's right.
The comic is a guy named Robert Lee.
Robert Lee.
Who, you know, who's still working. Very funny dude.
L.E.?
L.E.E., yeah. Not L-I. He wasn't Asian.
Oh, it could have been L-E-I-G-H. L-E-I-G-H.
Like that's right. Like Vivian Leigh.
Right.
Who was hilarious, too.
What about Michael J. Pollard on Wings? Any memory?
Fucking Michael J. Pollard was on Wings. Yeah, I forgot that. Michael J. Pollard was on Wings. I kind of remember, again, you meet your heroes. He was, he wasn't the warmest guy. He was still tripping, I guess. And he was, you know, he was there. I mean, there wasn't that much interaction between, you know, they would do their thing and then they'd go to their rooms and smoke a joint or jerk off or whatever.
I was once replaced by Michael J. Pollard.
Oh, tell
in
us.
What?
I did. It was horrible.
Did you ever tell me this? What
yeah,
was it?
I was once replaced by Billy Barney.
Well, that was a Mel Brooks.
Yes. Yes. In Life Stinks.
Oh, my God.
They were really wanted me. They kept saying, oh, Gilbert, you're great for the part. And I was replaced with Billy Barney at the last minute. They said, but
he worked for half.
Yeah.
It's just a money thing. It's just a money thing.
I was doing a movie, the last of the Gene Wilder, Richard Pryor comedies called Another You. Mm-hmm. It was horrible. Mm-hmm. And I was playing one of the parts, and then they fired the director, and most of the cast got rid of all the previously shot footage and replaced a bunch of people, and they replaced me with Michael J. Pollard.
Because you weren't dynamic enough?
Yeah.
Michael J. Pollard.
I didn't wow. have the sex appeal of Michael J. Pollard.
Was Mason Reese unavailable?
Oh, I would love to see a threesome with you, Mason Reese, and Michael J. Pollard.
It can be arranged.
Fucking each other and rubbing each other with noxzema. And, you know, and. Oh, God.
It can be arranged. Yeah. What about Peter Tork? Did an episode of Wings.
Peter Tork did an episode of Wings. You name it,
Phil
they did
Leeds.
It. Oh, well, Phil
Let's
Leeds.
Let's talk about Phil Leeds.
Oh,
Phil
my
Leeds.
God. He always popped up on, what was that? Ally McBeal.
That's right. McBeal. The judge. That's right.
Phil Leeds was, I forget who told me this, but he was one of the original sick comics in the 50s who did, I guess, more blue stuff and more outrageous stuff. Like Irwin Corey did kind of offbeat shit. He didn't do like a joke punchline. It was strange. And Phil Leeds is also in Rosemary's Baby.
That's
of
right.
Movies,
he is.
Right?
Oh,
he's,
yeah.
And because he's got this hilariously funny face and suddenly it's malevolent in that film. But Phil Leeds was, I guess, a few years away from dying. But so he looked like what all Jews look like eventually, like an oil painting in the rain, you know.
Bar.
Melting. But so funny and gave me and Tim one of our longest, crack-ups that we ever had, because he had to say the line, he screwed me. He screwed me blue. And coming out of this guy's face, which was like, it looked like an apple sculpture on a windowsill. It was a fucking... You know, he was he was so aware of his comic appeal and what he looked like and was so amazing in front of this audience that, that was a particularly memorable one. Hell, we had Oliver North on the game.
I know. I was going through IMDb looking at the names.
Which was, I don't know who thought that would be – that's like having, hey, we got Joey Goebbels. We got Goebbels on the show. Jay's going to prison, buddies. It'll pull our ratings up. We had Oliver North. This guy had lied to Congress. He's a nightmare, you know. And we did a scene where I did the scene with him. And I remember Tim was having a tough time with it. Tim Daly, the handsomest man in North America.
He is. My wife is in love with him.
He's everybody's
and,
wife.
And I would wind up sort of working with Tim again.
Yeah.
In that I was Miss Yes Picklick. In a couple of episodes where he was Superman on that cartoon.
Oh, interesting. Yes, yes, yes. Superman. Fuck Tim Daly.
And Tim Daly is, of course, the brother of Tyne Daly.
That's right.
From Cagney and Lacey.
That's right.
And
that's
the
right.
son of James Daly. Of Medical Center.
Oh,
Medical
that's
Center.
Right.
And I believe The Twilight Zone.
The Twilight Zone and also a Star Trek episode.
Correct.
Oh, which Twilight Zone?
Wait, hold, where he jumps off the train last...
Willoughby?
Willoughby.
Oh, that was a great one.
An iconic episode.
great episode.
Where there's like a double whammy at the
end.
Next
up, Willoughby.
He gets off. He's the Rod Serling loved the overworked, you know, the guy from the 50s and early 60s, the overworked executive who's longing for a time, you know, the halcyon days, and he takes the train, and every night he falls asleep, and in this dream he's on an old-fashioned train, and it stops at Willoughby, and he looks outside, and there's kids rolling hoops, and there's ice cream stands, and everybody's walking hand in hand wearing straw hats and all that stuff. And finally one night he gets off the fucking train, and we're back in the present. Apparently he walked off the train at Willoughby. And then you think that's it. Oh, my God. Except they put his body in the back of this hearse, and it says Willoughby Funeral Home. Wah! What the fuck? Like they did the whole thing. Willoughby.
There was another Twilight Zone very much in that same order of a guy who's like works for a big agency.
Yeah.
And it's Gig Young.
Really?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. Is that the one where he meets himself as a boy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Gig Young gets stuck. He's on his way to a business meeting. Mm. His car breaks down. He's stuck in a town, and he realizes, I think it's called walking distance. Mm-hmm. He's in walking distance of the town he grew up in.
Wow.
So he walks there, and everything is exactly the same, and he sees himself as a little
Interesting.
Boy.
Interesting.
And that's a great one.
And there's another one where a guy who's overworked with the actor's name is escaping me. This guy also was in The Godfather. He played one of the Dons.
I know who you mean.
Robert Marley?
No, that's
the guy that played Barzini?
Yeah, Barzini, when he says, you know.
Richard Conti.
Oh, oh my
where
God.
Richard Conti is over a guy, he jumps out the window, but of course he doesn't jump out the window.
The girl with the cat eyes.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Every time he falls asleep, he sees the girl with the cat eyes.
Wants to bring him into a fun house or bring him onto a ride or something, but he can't.
And he says in that wonderful Richard Conti way, he goes, there's no way to win. It's tails you win. You know, it's heads you win, tails I lose.
Tails I lose. And everybody's smoking. Everybody's smoking.
Oh, yes.
This brings us to what, as we wind down, the kind of things you watched as a kid. Now, you wrote a couple of episodes of The New Outer Limits.
I did.
Were an Outer Limits fan as a kid? Because we ask a lot of people who grew up around here. What you watch as a kid. You watch the same stuff we did.
I guess I did. I mean,
Twilight Zone, Chiller Theater.
Oh, Chiller Theater used to scare just the opening credits.
With the six-fingered hand coming out of the quicksand.
Yeah. And then there was Creature Features, which was on WNEW.
Sure.
Where they had a guy who was one of the local announcers, I guess, kind of be a creepy guy.
Yeah, but in New York, it was Zachary.
Zachary.
Yeah.
I never watched Zachary. He is John Zachary?
Indeed. He is indeed. He's in his – I think he's 90-something.
Well, I got to tell you something. You know, it occurred to me and you can research this. There are guys alive that really founded modern television, television as we know it. Chuck McCann.
We had Chuck McCann.
You did have Chuck McCann.
Yeah, he was terrific.
He was great.
There's not – I feel like Lee Strasberg. There's not a plaque or a statue. For Chuck McCann.
Yeah.
This guy created him and Sonny Fox.
Sandy Becker. Yep.
Who may be still alive, I think.
I'm not sure.
Maybe Sonny Fox.
Sonny Becker's gone, but Sonny Fox is around.
Kind of live sketch comedy. Soupy Sales did this kind of cutting edge, really raw stuff, which, you know, I mean, without them, I mean, who knows
what
would happen.
So you were watching the stuff with Officer Joe Bolton.
There was, I remember now, because we were talking about Pat Hingle. There was a Pat Hingle Twilight Zone episode.
Oh, wow. What is
where that? He's a henpecked guy who like works for a toy factory, and he really wants to be, you know, with these little kids that he was with as a boy.
Yeah. I don't remember that.
Yeah. But, oh, yeah, there's so...
So you liked horror films and you liked sci-fi.
I did like sci-fi and horror. But also
stuff.
I loved all the local shows in New York. You know, New York was the...
Captain Jack McCarthy, you remember?
Three Bells and All's
Three
Well.
Bells. Hey, he's a local kid. You remember Beachcomber Bill? Am I the only person who remembers that?
I don't.
Or Diver Dan?
Diver Dan.
Was the guy with Finley.
Was a fish with that little flappy thing. Yeah.
Right.
All that live
and
TV
I remember
stuff.
Captain Jack used to say, well, time and tide wait for no man.
Yeah. Now it's off to the bar.
Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
Now, I remember on Wings, because he was Carlton, William Hickey, and I was his nephew, at one part, he was talking about me on the thing, and he goes, Louis is a nice boy, but he's got that annoying voice.
Yes, yeah.
Now, I heard you have a story about me during the making of Wings eating on the set.
I don't remember. Maybe because I don't want to remember.
Well, when Stephen and I first connected on LinkedIn.
Yes. Do I remember?
This is what he's referring to. You said to me, I'll do the show, I'll tell stories about watching Gilbert eat.
I was just probably trying to impress Frank.
You were impressing him by saying you saw me eat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I watched him eat a foot-long sandwich. Gilbert can unhinge his jaw like a fucking snake. Without chewing, nobody was looking. Holy shit. And he passed the whole thing intact.
Sorry.
He's not from this earth. He's not of this earth. Gilbert Gottfried, not of this earth.
You want to talk? As we run out of time here, you want to talk? I got a whole bunch of things left. You want to talk about Kojak movie?
Kojak, yeah.
You did a Kojak.
Well, look, I've been lucky enough to work with all these great guys.
And Telly Savalas did the great Twilight Zone episode. Tina, yeah.
He did. Yeah, Talking Tina. I worked with Telly Savalas on one of the last Kojak TV movies, in which it was clear that his main motivation in any scene was to find a place to sit down. And they would go over the scene, and he would say, "All right, I'm going to sit over here, and then I'm going to move to that seat over there. And I'm going to sit on the desk," and that's how they would direct it. And me and Andre Brower were the two kind of detectives who did all the footwork, but he would just be in scenes where he'd be drinking coffee. I don't think he was sucking lollipops.
I believe Angie Dickinson was in that.
Angie Dickinson was that? Oh, God, Angie Dickinson, yeah.
I'm just going to throw some names at me.
As
we run out of time. Philip Bosco?
Phil Bosco I worked with a few times, and we did a play. We did Come Back, Little Sheba at the Old Roundabout, and we did the first movies I was in was called Walls of Glass, very obscure. And Phil Bosco was one of these redoubtable character guys, New York-based. He's still around. I think he lives in Tenafly or something like that. A great actor. Look, I mean, actors are sort of treated like shit, and maybe justifiably so. I mean, obviously, you know, they make money and they get a lot of easy affirmation. But he would have been knighted if he was if we were in England. But Gilbert would have been thrown into debtor's prison.
For sure.
So I'm glad we're here.
Made a movie called I Woke Up Early the Day I Died, written by Ed Wood.
Ed Wood, yeah. Now, I knew Ed Wood in the old days.
Did you work with Tippi Hedren or Eartha Kitt?
Neither. I think I worked with Billy Zane, who's the Eartha Kitt of white guys, I guess. look, I've done so many things, and a lot of them are, of course, on the resume, but a lot of them don't register anymore. Uh-huh. Go ahead, throw some.
How about Elliot Gould?
Elliot Gould, I worked with in The Shining,
right.
And he was an extremely cool, approachable guy. And I played poker with him a couple of times. I've been lucky enough to work with all these great legends.
You were in The Flamingo Kid with Richard Crenna and Hector Elizondo.
All these guys.
Anything there? And Gary Marshall, of course.
Gary Marshall. Well, I mean, I had been a cabana boy, and I think when I met Gary Marshall, that's what sort of got me the job. It was, you know, Marissa Tomei was in that movie. I think I was trying to bang her, I think, and she gave me the brush off. Yeah, terrible. Her mistake. Richard Crenna was in it, and all these great character guys. Richard Stahl was in it.
Remember Richard Stahl?
Yes. He used to pop up on The Odd Couple.
The Odd Couple,
of course.
Right.
Yeah. He was great.
Roger J. Doctor.
He
married. He married what was his name? His little character guy who was in McHale's Navy.
Billy Hallop?
Not Billy Hallop.
Billy
God, that's from the Dead End Kids. Billy Hallop. One of my favorite, Odd Couple episodes is when Blanche is going to get remarried, and they've got to stand up.
What is that guy's name? He was the cab driver in All in the Family.
Oh, he was. That's
oh, my
right.
God. Billy. Yes, yes. I think he.
But that's not Billy Hallop.
No, not Billy Hallop. That's right.
Yeah.
And Richard Stahl was the preacher who spoke
oh,
like
God,
this.
Oh, God, I see his
Let's
face.
Let's take
so
another
clear.
Crack.
So he's the same guy on the subway train in The Odd Couple that's selling the marked up sandwiches when,
that's
they're,
right.
when they're trapped
well,
in
that
the.
That was his whole shtick, was. But he was part of this.
He
this,
was hysterical.
He was part of a comedy troupe in the 60s. He was, you know, kind of hipped out. Pot-laced comedy group, Richard Stahl, who
funny
always played
guy.
These kind of dry,
yeah,
dry
very
white guys.
Deadpan,
very deadpan. Yeah, that's right.
I confused him with the guy that was married to Valerie Harper, Richard Shaw.
Oh yes,
do you remember
yes.
him?
Yes. Richard Shaw yes. is kind of almost like a not a Dick Shawn, almost like a Kenneth Mars.
A little
type.
Bit, yeah, a little bit.
Kenneth Mars.
Yeah, yeah. What else do I have? Charles Durning. You were in the Kennedys of Massachusetts.
Charlie Durning became a friend. I became friendly with this guy. And this was a guy who's literally an unsung hero in that he was at D-Day.
Yeah.
He's, you know, a great – a genius. A great,
I heard stories about him, like in World War II.
Yeah.
He would, like, be carrying, like, a body of his friend
yeah.
through gunfire. Yeah. I mean, he was an amazing guy. And I heard, I hope this is true, they said one time the Nazis were lining up these American soldiers and they were shooting them one by one. And Charles Durning just turned to the other soldier and said, "Let's get the fuck out of here." And he made a run for it.
And that other soldier was William Hickey.
Yeah. But I also heard Charles Durning was in one, among the troops that freed the camps.
That's right. That's right. I mean, this guy did tons of stuff. He was not only was he among the troops that freed people from the camps, but also he had been injured. He was stabbed in the throat with a bayonet and went blind because it severed a nerve or something like that, which I guess subsequently grew back. I don't
yeah.
know. Who the hell knows? But he led an amazing life and was, again, a really accessible guy. He was charming. He knew lots of filthy limericks. He taught me that. There once was a sailor named Bates who danced the fandango on skates. He fell on his cutlass, which rendered him nutless and practically useless on dates. Which convulsed me.
Beautiful.
Then he was, I think, a dance instructor.
That's right. He was
yeah.
a great dancer.
That's right.
And he was a prize fighter.
He knew jujitsu, I guess.
Yeah.
He was taught judo or jujitsu by David Niven, who was
oh my God.
Who was in the OSS or something like that.
How bizarre.
And I heard that when he was a prize fighter,
yeah.
at one of his opponents was Jack Warden.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Bill Hickey was in Jack Warden's corner.
He was the ring boy.
He was a guy. He was his cut man.
Did you know Christopher Lee was a Nazi hunter?
He was?
Yeah.
Yes.
Tall Christopher Lee?
Yep.
Yes.
Scary Nazi hunter.
How about that?
Christopher Lee, Nazi hunter, would be a good movie.
Indeed
some
it would
tall
be.
Guy.
See, these are people, like, I would have loved to have interviewed Charles Durning.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I look at the Love Boat IMDb,
yeah.
and I see hundreds and hundreds of names, and everybody's gone.
Everybody's gone.
We've had a few on the show. We had Ken Berry.
Ken
on
Berry?
The show. We had
yes.
Asner.
And yeah, Larry
Asner,
Storch.
I know
yeah.
Larry
we
Storch.
Had Larry Storch. You got to go back and check these
oh,
out.
In fact, with Christopher Lee, I remember hearing a recording on the set of some movie where one of the actors gets stabbed in a scene. And Christopher Lee goes, "No, that's not the sound someone makes when they're stabbed."
Oh.
And I went, "Whoa!
Okay.
Oh, man!"
But you realize all these guys, you know, they lived through World War II.
Yeah,
and yeah, Christopher Lee was fucking probably around during the Blitz. I mean, who the fuck knows? I mean, they had lives beyond
yeah.
what we see on TV or movies. You know, they were three dimensional. Some were four dimensional.
I watched the Vietnam War on TV.
Yeah, that's
yes.
I know what it was like.
Yeah.
Well, I did a Vietnam War movie, and I get flashbacks. Vietnam War movie flashbacks. Don't talk to me about it.
You're a Marx Brothers fan.
A huge Marx
so
Brothers
so quick.
Fan.
Oh, yes.
And you listen to the Steve Stoliar episode, which we appreciate. Favorite Marx Brothers movie?
I'd say Duck Soup.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, I was talking about this today, that I was such a big fan and I had all their memorabilia. I mean, I had books, Harpo Speaks, and I would
– Yeah.
And I finally got the book called The Marx Brothers Scrapbook, which was written by Richard J. Annabile or Annabile or whatever. And I remember being 13, 14 at the time and opening it up and hearing or reading Groucho say the word cunt
You know, like, talking about how he wanted to get Marilyn.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
You know, Chico was got the clap, and my fucking world was rocked, man. I couldn't believe it. And then again, I realized, okay, yeah, you know, the show business, comedians, of course. You know, they were out of their minds, horny and gambling, and they were human beings.
A friend of mine... he introduced me to Maxine Marks.
Yeah, I met her. I met her a long time ago too.
And he said after Maxine died, he was helping clear out the apartment and making sure everything got to her relatives and everything. And he was clearing out a closet, and he found
William Hickey.
Yeah, he found William Hickey going, "Hey, can you close the door? I'm trying to nap." And he found two of Chico's pointed hats.
No.
And one of Harpo's wigs.
Wow.
That he said.
Incredible.
He passed on to her kids, but he, like, obviously was seriously thinking of just pocketing this. It's like finding the sled from Citizen
Kane. Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right.
And we said this off mic, but I was really heartened to learn that your two sons are into this stuff, and they're into black and white movies, and they listen to old radio, like Duffy's Tavern,
because
the kids go crazy for Duffy's Tavern.
But I got to tell you, that stuff worked then, and it still works. Yeah. There's no reason to try to reinvent it. You know, there's so much we can talk about it, what's wrong, in my opinion, with current popular media. You know, that it's corporate owned and all that stuff, and the idea is try to make money as fast as you can, so they kind of obviate all the great detail and all the texture that made all these things great. But many times, because I listen to classic radio in the car in L.A., we're doing lots of driving, I have to fucking pull over and so my kids can finish or we stay in the car after I park so they can hear the end of Dragnet, because it's compelling.
That's cool.
Benny's show works, you know. It absolutely works. And these old movies work.
You're raising your kids the right way.
I'm also touching them incorrectly, inappropriately, but I figure it balances it out.
Anything to plug, Steve?
Anything
before
to plug,
we
Steve?
Go?
I'm on this show called iZombie, which is on the CW, where I play a douchebag. I'm on the show House of Lies, which is on Showtime, where I play a douchebag. And I've been playing douchebags for years.
The shorts that you just made with Tim. Where he kills you.
That's right.
It's wonderful.
They're funny. Yeah.
So I want to recommend that. And I also
The
Daily Show. And I also want to recommend your tweets.
Well, I got to tell you, I haven't tweeted for 3 years. I'm off social media.
You're off, huh?
I keep it, it was bad for me.
There were some good tweets.
Had some
Fatty
fun.
Fatty Arbuckle as a gynecologist.
I got a lot of good affirmation, and I like the 140 character limit because it's like a haiku. It was fun for me to write, and I met a lot of cool people, but at the end of the day, it was not good for me because I became addicted to it.
Oh yeah,
you know, it was really easy to just fire off stuff, and then I became political, and that was a mistake. And then I began engaging with people. I mean, engaging with hecklers, and I was out of my depth. I mean, you know, you can do that. I could not do it, and it was depressing.
You can't get into trouble tweeting.
You can't?
No.
Oh, right. No.
Yeah,
not
no.
Me.
That's right. No.
Luckily, no. I've always played it safe.
Attaboy. Yeah. There's a lot of sadness behind that laugh.
I didn't even get to ask you about Noam Pitlick when you come next time.
Noam Pitlick. Yeah, Noam Pitlick. Noam Pitlick directed.
You know that name, Gil?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Sure. Directed many an episode of Wings.
And was an actor himself. Was in The Graduate. He's in The Fortune
Cookie.
Now, was he in... Oh, God, I think he even pops up in the terrible Night Gallery.
Oh, he might.
Do you remember Night Gallery?
Yeah.
Sure,
yeah.
Man.
I think he's like...
Some of those episodes are fucking great.
Some hold up.
I think
he's
a mortician or something.
I'm picturing him now.
But Night Gallery, I thought... I love Twilight Zone. I thought Night Gallery, when you watch them now, they're fucking awful.
Well, why? Because they were just dated. But
yeah. It's the worst of 70s television.
I guess I like the pilot, the Roddy McDowell thing.
Those were good.
Ossie Davis.
And Ossie Davis.
And Spielberg directed the one with Joan Rivers.
Joan Crawford.
And Tom Wisely.
Right. Yeah. Okay, I don't know how much time we have. Here's a movie that I think could bear to be remade well is X, the man with the X-ray eyes.
Oh,
Ray
yes.
Milan.
Oh, yeah. And Don Rickles.
Don Rickles is
yes.
up there.
Like
right,
that
plays
one.
His manager.
And Dick
it's
Miller.
It's Willy Weber.
Dick Miller, who we just had on the
Dick
show.
Dick Miller. Classic
that was
legend.
That was a fun movie.
It was good, man, where he could see through the – eventually he went mad because he could see through the – see through time itself or something, where he ends up at a revival meeting where
yep.
Christopher Bernard is there and Bill Hickey is there and they rip his eyes out or yeah. rips his own eye. That's how it ends.
What about the incredible two-headed transplant? With
Rosa Greer.
Yes.
You don't miss it.
With the animatronic Ray Milland head that just kind of
Ray thinking I won an Oscar for the Lost
Weekend. Lost, yeah.
Yeah, like what happened?
But, you know, guess what? You got to work. You got to eat. That's the credo of the actor. Got to eat. Got to eat. Not everybody is in the upper 1%, you know, which is why we're all here now.
Well, Mr. Gottfried, should we let this man get on with his life?
I have so much to do. I have many drinks to drink. And
you're the voice of the Green Goblin?
I was.
Oh,
yeah, they canceled
that.
Yeah, that's over.
That was
the voice of the Green Goblin.
That was fun.
Right now I'm working on a pilot called Model Woman, which is for ABC, which is loosely based on the life of Eileen Ford. So it's me, Andy McDowell, who's freaking gorgeous, and a bunch of models, a bunch of effortlessly beautiful young people that we get to look at. That's it. So
and we never talked about your mom being a Copa.
My mom was a Copa girl and a nightclub singer.
Jules Bodell.
Well, I sort of put that into that movie Clubland.
Yeah.
But I don't want to talk about me anymore. Let's just go off. And
I wish Clubland was available. It's on VHS.
It's not available.
Not on
That's
DVD.
How successful it was. It's not a terrible movie by any means.
Oh, Alan Alda was nominated.
That's right. He's very good in it.
Trying to get him here. He doesn't he's focused on science.
Well,
these
I guess
days.
So, you know, and also guess what? People are getting on. You know, it's hard to travel, I think. Well, actually, I think they live out on the island, he and his wife. In the summers, I think they go out to the
yeah,
Hamptons.
Yeah, they got a place here too.
They got a place here.
And as far as people getting on, this is a weird thing, and that's that first of all, some people are frozen in time because
mm-hmm.
the last time you saw them, they were like
that's
20.
Right. That's right. That's
so
right.
they're frozen. And then you stop and you go, hey, you'll hear someone's like in their 80s and you go, oh, how could they be? And then you go, oh, wait a second. When
that's
I
right.
was a kid,
yeah.
I was watching that.
William
yeah.
Shatner, 85 this week.
How about that? But he's
sharp.
Making more money than he ever
yeah,
did. I
sharp.
But, you know, but I have to say that it was really funny. It was when I grew up, there were still more than remnants. There were still whole bits of the culture that our parents grew up with. I mean, not a week went by when we didn't hear or see Bob Hope, Jack Benny, here's Sinatra, Milton Berle. They were always doing specials, always this
right,
and that. You know,
right.
Bing Crosby, for Christ's
right.
sake. You know, and so the same things that our grandparents were listening to at the turn of the century, when they were still around, I knew who Rudy Valli was. And I was around when he died. I went out to L.A. and Rudy Valli had just died. And so – but the weird thing is that our kids nowadays know nothing of that culture, which kind of stopped. It hit a wall and that was it.
What I find really weird is growing up listening to the radio and they'd have the top five hits
mm-hmm.
and it would be – The Rolling Stones and Frank Sinatra,
yeah, that's right.
Bob Dylan and Bing
Crosby.
It was
yeah.
like this
yeah.
weird mix.
Yeah. Sammy Davis doing the Candyman.
Oh, that's yes,
right.
yes.
Mixed in
along
with
the Who.
With Badfinger.
Right. Yeah.
yeah.
Badfinger.
Yeah.
That's good.
We had Mark Hudson in that chair last week from the Hudson Brothers.
Yeah, I remember the Hudson Brothers.
Yeah.
The Hudson Brothers.
Yeah.
So I guess
I feel honored.
Yeah,
well, thanks, Steve. You were
Thank
a perfect
you.
Guest.
Thanks.
Okay, once again, I'm Gilbert Gottfried. This is Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal Podcast with my co-host Frank Santopadre. We once again recorded at Nutmeg Post with our engineer Frank Verderosa, and our guest this week is my old co-star. May the burn of happiness.
May diseased camel defecate on your kepi.
Stephen Weber.
Great to be here. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you, guys.